semi-pro football in my early 20s, and I would have to drive all the way across town to an area that I just wasn't comfortable in, because it was just a very different area than I grew up in. And I would show up, and I was the quarterback, and so usually the quarterback has a little bit of influence on the team, and practice was just not going well. And we were at the water break, and all the guys with their helmets are off, and they're just kind of like down, and you know, womp womp. Well, a couple of weeks earlier, I had gone to an improvisational comedy show, and about halfway through the show, they called me up on stage to do an activity with them. And long story short, I stayed on stage for about 2.5 years. Like, they asked me to join the team. Like, I stayed on the rest of the night and then for 2.5 years afterwards. But there was an activity that we did called Zip Zap Zop, that we were at the water cooler, and I was just like, hey guys, make a circle. And then I started doing this game, and we, you know, zip zap zap, and we started kind of yelling at each other, and it completely transformed everybody's mentality. And practice, or the water break was only 10 minutes or so. We went back to practice, and practice had completely changed. Energy was high. People were having a good time. And after practice, the coach pulled me aside. He was like, what did you do during the water break? So I started explaining him zip, zap, zop. And he was like, shut up. I don't care. Just do it again tomorrow. So like every day during water break, because we practiced 3 days a week, I would come with some kind of quick activity. And that led to my belief in that about great teams. And I believe that great teams have two things in common. So the first thing is they have a shared language. And so if somebody yells out sweep right, or they yell purple 15 or whatever it is, the team knows what they're supposed to do. But the other thing, and this is forgotten, I think, in the business of sports, is that great teams have inside jokes. They have moments where you had to be there, where somebody is doing something and somebody says, oh, remember that thing? And everybody laughs. And then all of a sudden the mentality of the practice is much different, or at the game is much different.
So you were just listening to James Leith. He's our guest on the podcast today, and he has a very unique approach to developing leadership and mental resiliency in athletes. And he's going to share some really powerful and practical team building activities that you can take and implement in your program tomorrow. You're listening to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin alongside my co-host Nate Sanderson. Every week in around 30 minutes, we're giving you strategies and tools for you to grow as a leader and build your culture. We know the reason why most teams struggle, and that is because they have a dysfunctional culture. This leaves coaches frustrated with entitled players, losing seasons, and toxic environments. And at Thrive On Challenge, we believe that the silver bullet is a transformational culture. We help coaches to create and sustain transformational cultures so they can strengthen relationships, raise standards, and inspire others to make an impact. To learn more about our workshops, retreats, and mentorship program, go to thriveonchallenge.com. You can also get the coaching notes PDFs for every Coaching Culture episode by subscribing to our weekly newsletter. You're listening to episode 131, Team Building Activities, with our guest, James Leith. James worked for several years in Florida with the IMG Academy as their leadership coach for their elite athletes. And he's recently started his own business called Unleash the Athlete, which is a mental resilience and leadership development company for athletes, coaches, and top performers who want to be the best in their field. I got to meet James at the Way of Champions conference that John O'Sullivan and Jared Lynch host. Met him there a few years back, and he was one of the big time presenters there, and got us doing some really interesting and engaging things. Even as adults, we were just having a blast, and we were really connecting with other people at the conference. And so I was excited to reach out to him to bring him on the podcast so he could share some of those things with us. Now, James, you said earlier, great team cultures, they share a common language and they share inside jokes. How have you seen that to be true with some of the teams that you've worked with?
I actually saw this come to life when I was working at IMG Academy as the head of leadership. We did this game where it's called One Word Story. And the girls came up with a story, one word at a time in this circle. And I think we've done this at the Way of Champions conference. But somehow Purple Duck became the funniest thing to this 16 and under girl soccer team. And every time somebody said it, somebody would laugh. And it was, and I don't remember the context anymore, just that it was in that story. The next day I go to a game, and there, our best player at that age group got slide tackled. It was really bad. It was, the girl tried to take her out. And so our girl, she got up and started running towards this player. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, this is at best a red card. Like, this girl's going to destroy this other girl. And from the bench, all of a sudden the girl started yelling, "Purple Duck, Purple Duck." And you watch this girl who's about to get kicked out of the game, stop, look at the bench, smile, turn around, and then just keep playing. I thought, that is perfect right there. Now, the game that we did, the activity that we did the day before, took 6 minutes. Like, 6 minutes out of, you know, quote unquote practice, and it just saved her right there. And it also built trust within the team that they had each other's back, because this girl was going to destroy that girl who slide tackled her. And she didn't, because of Purple Duck. So that's just one of the few activities that that I've taught over the years, and it was clear as day that was how she didn't get kicked out, how she got saved.
It's interesting. We've talked on the podcast before about, you know, the importance of coaches, whether they're facilitating the activity or they're facilitating the space for something fun to just happen, you know. And I think, as we've experienced with you at Way of Champions, the importance of even just creating that space. You know, we're always thinking about, yeah, but I got to get ready for this on Tuesday, or yeah, but we're not shooting it very well, or yeah, but, you know, how would you give a little commercial for why that's so valuable in terms of building relationships and really strengthening a culture?
Yeah, so a student athlete has been at school all day, sitting at a desk, looking up at adults, checking their TikTok stats, you know, making sure that there's the right amount of likes on their Instagram. They got all this stuff, and then they get to practice. And as coaches, sometimes we forget that we need to interrupt that thought pattern, that we need to wake up the athlete and set the mood for practice. And any coach will tell you, and any athlete will tell you, that they're at their best state. Athletes are at their best state when they're in that childlike mentality, when they're having fun, when they enjoy each other, when the grind becomes more of a, I get to hang out with my friends and we're going to go as a team and we're going to go compete together. And so you have to realize that you can take a half an hour or an hour and have an okay practice, because eventually the athletes will kind of fall in line and be like, oh, okay, we're at practice. Or you can take a couple minutes at the beginning and just let them have some fun. And forget that, you know, one drill with some cones, if you skip that and do a 6 or 7 minute activity to kind of get their mindset, that now you have the entire practice to have a better practice. And so it becomes a quality of practice versus a quantity of practice. And nobody needs more practice. They need better practice. And when you insert an activity of something that's fun, whether I talked about zip, zap, zop, I mean, there's a whole bunch of different, Nate, you could play Simon Says for 5 minutes and get them to have fun. And, you know, but what's interesting about just a game like Simon Says, and mind you, I've done this with grown men. So it's not like an adult, or, you know, it's not for adults. It's only for kids. No. When you're playing sports, you're supposed to have fun. You're supposed to, and being competitive and having fun are not two different things. They can be the same thing. But when you get them to play a game like Simon Says, well, what else is that teaching them? It's teaching them to be in formation. It's teaching them to listen. It's teaching them to respond appropriately to the directions given. So subconsciously, these activities are actually helping them to be better athletes, more disciplined athletes. And it only takes a couple minutes out of your time. Plus, most coaches will say that athletics, competing, is mental. But rarely do coaches actually train the mental. And so when you do these activities, you have takeaways at the end. You have opportunities to talk to them about, like, what does this game mean? Like, Zip Zab Zop is all about just listening, receiving the information, and then giving information and paying attention and being hyped up. And so there's a lot of different things you can take from just having a little bit of fun at the beginning of practice.
Yeah, what you're saying there is so important, because our season, even our sport, can be such a grind sometimes, and it's a good way to shake things up. Now, of all the things that you do with teams, I think my favorite are the improv games that you do. I mean, we've implemented a few with some of the teams that I've worked with, and always the response is, that was a lot of fun, but that was really, really challenging. Can you share a little bit about how you use improv with teams and kind of the effects that it has?
Yeah, the improv games have been really, really fun, because when, like, for example, when you're at a place where the athletes are the best in the nation, and they expect a lot of different things to be kind of to given to them, but then also there's a lot expected from them, it's very difficult to put them in a position where they feel stressed. And how do you create a situation where they can be on the field and feel this immense pressure and be able to trust each other? Well, you do that in practice, and you have to be intentional about it. And what improv does is it puts an athlete on the stage where they make a mistake and everybody laughs at them, and they realize it's okay. Like, oh, don't laugh at me. Don't make fun of me. It's like, no. It's actually different. We are laughing at you, like, admittedly, and it's awesome. And you failed spectacularly on stage, and we still love you. And that builds team culture, and that translates onto the field and onto the court as, I can take a chance and I can fail, and my teammates still love me. And sometimes it's subconscious, and other times the coach can bring it up and be like, hey, I know you're not taking chances on the court, but man, remember when you took chances on the stage? And when I say stage, I've done them in locker rooms, so it doesn't have to be an actual stage. But the point is that when you do it, and when we're talking improv, if someone listening doesn't really know what that is, imagine what Whose Line Is It Anyways, that television show, and just things get thrown at them. And the number one rule in improv is yes and. That's it. That's the number one rule. So when you get given something, you have to accept it, and then you have to add to it. And in every team sport, that's the secret to success. Imagine in soccer, someone kicks you the ball, but that wasn't the quote unquote play. It's like, you can't just be like, nope, timeout. You're supposed to kick the ball to the left. It's like, no, you have to take that ball and you got to go. You know, if somebody, and like football and my primary sport, you call the play, but then after about 2 seconds, when the play starts, it's all improv. Now we're just making it up. We're using our skills. We're using our abilities. We're using our experience and our trust in each other to get that ball to the end zone. And that can be translated from doing some improv games. Like, there's this one called Alone in the Attic, where if you got 12 players and they're all sitting down on the ground, you got one person stands up and they go into this imaginary attic and they do something. And then they leave the attic and sit down. Well, the second person gets up, does that thing the first person did, and then adds to it. Well, by the time you get to the 10th person, people are like peeing in the corner. People are like, you know, they're like unwrapping gifts. They're like breaking things, but everybody has to do their own interpretation of what they just saw. And then when someone forgets, it's hilarious, because they just stand there and they're like, oh my gosh, because you're not allowed to help them. So they just have to sit there and struggle. And how many times do we let an athlete just sit there and struggle? That's when we're building the myelin. That's when we're building the stuff in the brain where it's like, ooh, I got to recall that skill. And so when you do these kind of activities, they're fun. There's a lot of laughing, but we're actually teaching them to be kind of on their own and try to figure things out on their own. And that's super important.
Now, James, I know some coaches are thinking, I can't do this with my team, right? My team's attitudes are really negative, or, you know, I can't get college athletes to do this type of stuff, or prep professionals, or whatever, right? That's just silly stuff for kids' teams. In your experience, is there only certain groups that this approach works with?
Yeah, you reminded me of an activity I did with some NFL Combine guys. I was doing media training with them, and I noticed that whenever I asked them questions, they would always kind of answer starting with the same word, or just really just being not very creative with how they were responding. And so I made it into this improv game where I've played the improv game on stage before. But so I had the first guy sit on a chair and I asked him a question, and his first word of his response had to start with the letter, the last letter in the last word that I said. For example, tell me about your school. This first word has to start with an L. And so now, instead of him just going, oh yeah, I like, like, no. Now you have to use a word that starts with L, but it has to be a sentence that's actually makes sense. And when he fails, everybody just goes boo and get off the stage. And it's fun though. So we're all laughing. And so what happens is every communication that I had with them, they had to really think about how they were going to respond. And then, and we got through everybody because people were messing up left and right. And it was some people were like, get off. And then they'd jump, they'd like push them off the chair. And where at first they were like, I don't know, coach, this is kind of stupid. And I'm like, well, just give it a shot. And you're with me for an hour. So, and your agents are paying a lot of money. So how about you just shut up and you do this? And so and by the end of it, I mean, we did it probably for a half an hour and we were in stitches. It was so much fun. We went right into actual interviews, and the guys send me feedback afterwards, like text messages. They're like, I felt so confident. I felt like I could answer, and they did. They looked great. I watched the video. They looked really good. And so doing something silly like that actually improved their communication skills.
One of the things that always stuck with me from the Way of Champions conference, you know, and getting a chance to talk to you a little bit, is you put such a premium on teaching athletes how to greet one another and how to enter a room. And you want to just kind of explain a little bit of that and why that's so important with the athletes that you work with?
Yeah, there was a story a couple years ago where I was working with some guys that were trying to make it into the NBA. So they were training for the combine. And I had five guys in a room, and one of our guys was late. And I had worked with those guys for about 15 minutes, and I taught the handshake and how to make eye contact and how to introduce yourself clearly with a pause in between your first and last name. And this guy walks in and he walks over to me and kind of gives me this dead fish handshake, doesn't look me in the eye. And the guys on in the couches started booing him, and it kind of took him aback. And I was like, get out, try it again. Now, I'm 5'11". These guys are 6'8", 6'9". Like, they're huge, right? And I'm like looking up at him. I'm like, get out, try it again. And he's confused. And he goes outside and he comes back in and does the same thing. And they boot him. They're like, boo. I was like, all right, buddy, come on, let's go outside. So we went outside and he goes, I don't understand. What is going on? He goes, why are they booing me? I was like, well, you don't know who I am. And you don't know who's in that room. You're trying to get a job in the National Basketball Association. You need to come in with some enthusiasm, shake my hand, look me in the eye, introduce yourself. You're not in college anymore. And, you know, make a name for yourself. And he's like, all right. And so I was like, try it again. So I walked into the room, I shut the door, and he came in and he came over to me, and he still kind of gave me this like blah handshake. Maybe it was the princess. I think he gave me the princess handshake. And he was like, hey, my name is blah, blah. And the guys booed him again. So we go outside. And he goes, class has already started, hasn't it? And I go, yeah, it has. And you're failing. Like, you're terrible. He goes, well, what do I got to do? And so I showed him the handshake. And I said, I need you to come in like a happy puppy dog. And I need you to just come greet me. And like I literally am holding a check for you to enter the NBA. He goes, okay. So I slam the door, because the little things like that make it like an impression, these little anchors in the experience with your athletes. He opens up the door and he comes over to me with all this enthusiasm. He's like, hey, my name is so-and-so, and it's nice to meet you. And all the dudes stand up and start like clapping for him. They're like, yeah. And I'm like, all right, man, go sit down. Here we go. And so we kept going. And a couple, like 2 months later or so, I get a text message from him. He was like, I just got complimented on how I enter a room by, you know, some owner that he was interviewing with. And it's so important, you know. And so even at the Way of Champions conference, I don't remember if you guys were at the one where I lined everybody up and I like showed the handshake and how I teach it. Did you see that one? Okay. So yeah, so I line them, and this is what I do with every single team that I've ever coached in the last 18 years. On the first day of practice, I line all of them up, whether it's a sixth grade girls basketball or it's a men's semi-pro league with 40 guys. And I teach them, here's how you do a proper handshake. And I have them spread the fingers out so that way, you know, it doesn't get squeezed. I have them tilt the hand a little bit and then aim for the web. I said, when you do this, you look me in the eye and you introduce yourself to me, your first and last name. So, for example, mine's not James Leith. It's James Leith. And you're very clear because they haven't heard your name before. And when you do that, it sets you apart from other people. And I always get the question, well, what about like the cool handshake where you're like, hey, what's up, man? I said, well, if it's a first time meeting, do the handshake. But if they come at you and their hand is above their elbow, then it's the cool guy. Hey, man, what's up? Like, that's just how it is. But you teach them this kind of stuff. And if it's kids, you say, look, when you're at the grocery store and you see me, I want you to pretend like I've never met your parents before. And I want you to introduce me to your parents. And it's going to go like this. Coach Leith, this is my mom, Mrs. Sanchez, and this is my dad, Mr. Sanchez. And I'll be like, hey, it's nice to meet you. Because in that moment, we're teaching them life skills. But I also tell the parents, hey, when we're in the grocery store, I want you to pretend like you don't know me and have your kid introduce me. It's part of the curriculum. It's part of what I'm teaching them as a coach. But when you do things like that, what happens is when the team is done and the season's over and years later, guess what they want to do when they see you? They want to shake your hand and look you in the eye and introduce themselves. And that's what they remember. And I got this phone call from a guy that I had coached about 10 years previous to this, to that call. And he was a nationally ranked wrestler. And he comes up to, and he calls me up and he was like, coach, hey, it's my 21st birthday. I know I haven't talked to you in 10 years since I was on your football team, but I just want to call and say hi. And his professor had given him an assignment to reach out to somebody that had meant something to them in their youth. So I was super honored that he called me. And I was like, Maddie, you know, what do you remember from our time together? And he was like, two things. He's like, number one, do you still open up the door for Mrs. Coach Leith? And I was like, what are you talking about? He was like, yeah, every day after practice, Mrs. Leith would come and she'd get out of the car and then you'd go around and you'd open up the door for her. I was like, I didn't even know they saw that. I had no idea. And I was like, well, yeah, of course I do. He goes, I do it too. And coach, girls love it. I was like, that's awesome. I go, what else? What's your second one? He goes, well, I'm a wrestler. And when I get up on the mat and I'm about to, you know, I shake their hand and they give me the dead fish or the princess, which I love that he remembered the names. He's like, I grab the wrist and I go, you know, shake it like you mean it. And he's like, in that moment, a lot of times, I win the match. Psychological warfare, coach. I'm like, yes, that's fantastic. But what's interesting is that when he was on my football team, we went undefeated. We destroyed teams. We had so much fun. And I mean, teams couldn't score again. He didn't want to talk about any of that stuff. It didn't matter. He wanted to know if I still opened up the door for my wife and if I still shook hands and taught the handshake on the first day of practice. I just thought that was so cool.
All right, James, well, as we get ready to kind of wrap up, and we really appreciate you coming on here this week and your experiences and some of your activities are just so unique and so purposeful and so useful. I'm really glad that you're able to be able to share some of that with us. But I'm curious about, you've started working with a G League team in the NBA with the Windy City Bulls, and you know, you're working with guys that are kind of in limbo a little bit in terms of their athletic career. They're aspiring, obviously, to get to the NBA. But still, I would imagine mostly young adults, right? Young guys fresh out of college that are still kind of trying to find their way. And as a mental performance coach and one of the few that's in that capacity right now in the NBA, at least at the G League level, what's the number one need or number one thing that you're working with guys at that level on when it comes to their mental performance?
Well, I thank you for the kind words. I appreciate that. So at the G League, you've got guys who some are out of high school and or maybe a year of college. And by the time they got to the G League, they have gotten there by being the man on every team from middle school, high school, college. Like, they were the best. And now they're amongst peers that are you know, their skill level is just as high as them. And what got them to the G League won't necessarily get them into the NBA. What will get them into the NBA is being a role player, is being a teammate, being somebody that adds value to the team, not just pass me the ball, I'm going to score. And now they could definitely develop into that, absolutely. But what teams are looking for is someone that's going to come in and just help the team. So the biggest thing that I talk about with these guys is how to become, how to build their assets, how to build their value to a team, not just as the highest point scorer, but as somebody who's going to add value. And so what I do with the G League is I'll come in for a day and I'll hang out with the team and I'll go to practice and I'll hang out with the coaches. And then that night I will formulate something that needs to be discussed the next day, whether it's self-talk, confidence. We maybe need to do a goal setting session and explain to them the difference between outcome goals and process goals and creating systems and pre-game routines and controlling the things that they can control. But at the beginning of the season, I spent 2 weeks with them. And so doing what I do with a high-performing team like in the NBA, you have to have a relationship. Relationship is everything. And if you're just some person going in there and saying, okay, here's a skill, here's a tool, here's that, it doesn't really work well because they're just like, all right, this is just another check the box for this meeting. But you got to get in there. So I'm getting rebounds from the guys. I'm passing. I'm rubbing elbows. I'm making fun of them, you know, joining in the locker room banter and just having fun with them. And then it comes to before every game, I'm on a group text with all of them. I send them a text message, and it can be anything from something that Muhammad Ali said, or maybe it was like a Kobe Bryant tribute last week, just to kind of remind them that. A lot of them had relationships with Kobe, and it's just things that kind of help them to stay focused, because being in the G League, you're a journeyman, right? Like you at the drop of a hat, you can get picked up and go to another team because it's a little different than AAA. The Bulls don't own all the players. They only own two of them, and the rest of them can get picked up in a heartbeat by other teams. And so you have guys coming and going and then coming back. And so building that team bonding on a weekly basis is really important.
Now that's it for our conversation with James. We've been very lucky that he shared with us his PDF, Mastering Team Building Activities for Athletes. He's shrunk it down and he's sharing just a snippet, but there's three different activities in that. And we're going to use that as the coaching notes PDF this week. Now, how do you get the coaching notes PDF to this podcast? I'm going to put a link in the episode details. Also, you can go to thriveonchallenge.com. And if you register for any of the resources there, you're added to that weekly newsletter where we send out those coaching notes, an article, and a link to that week's podcast. So be sure to click on that link or go to thriveonchallenge.com. and subscribe to the weekly newsletter so that you can get a hold of those three really awesome activities. That's kind of giving you a sample of some of the stuff that James does or some of the resources he has out there to help coaches. Also, you can connect with James on Twitter at James Leith or go to his website, utathlete.com.